Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Moscow for a second day of talks. What's he looking to achieve?
The China-Russia relationship takes on a character of China being the stronger partner, Russia being the weaker partner.
Plus, aid workers helping to evacuate civilians from Chasiv-Yar in Ukraine's Donbass region.
Most of our family in America continued saying, "You guys need to leave, we're worried for you." And they said, "No, we are not going anywhere." And so we thought, okay, this is serious. They're staying. They're going to be helping the people. They need help from us.
And later in the program, a look at the strained Russia-Australia relationship. Today is Tuesday, March 21st. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Russian President Vladimir Putin hosted Chinese leader Xi Jinping for a second day of talks on Tuesday. Among the topics being discussed, a Chinese peace proposal to resolve Russia's war against Ukraine. Putin said Monday he viewed the Beijing peace plan with respect, but the plan has little chance of enactment as it is proposed, because it does not meet key demands from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, namely that Russia withdraw from Ukraine to honor its internationally recognized borders, including the Crimean Peninsula that Moscow illegally annexed in 2014 and the eastern Ukrainian regions Russian forces invaded in February of last year. Xi's three-day visit to Moscow gives both leaders a public show of partnership in opposing what they both see as American domination of global affairs. Here's President Xi.
We hope that their strategic partnership between China and Russia will, on the one hand, uphold international fairness and justice, and on the other hand, promote the common prosperity and development of our countries.
For its part, the U.S. has strongly rejected Beijing's call for a ceasefire, which it says would leave in place Moscow's territorial gains in eastern Ukraine. Russia has made an international pariah of itself as of late. What are the possible advantages Xi sees in warming up to Moscow? Why now? For some insight and context into Xi's visit, I'm joined by Rory Daniels, Managing Director of the Asia Society Policy Institute.
I think China wants a couple of strategic outcomes from their relationship with Russia. One is that China is very good at filling the vacuum of space in the international system when it is left by other powers. So with Russia, as you said, an international pariah, and without a lot of friends in the world, the China-Russia relationship takes on a character of China being the stronger partner, Russia being the weaker partner. And there's all sorts of ways that China can leverage that power dynamic in the relationship to achieve some of its domestic and international agenda. The second point I'd make is that while it seems as though Russia is isolated in the world, China and Russia do agree in principle that the U.S. and the U.S. alliance system is a threat to their aspirations and ultimately to peace and security in the world. So there's an alignment of principles here that might belie a sense that Russia is isolated in the international stage.
Well, to your first point, what you're saying is because Russia appears weakened on the national stage, China is hoping to have a little more power in that relationship. Wouldn't they then be foregoing some power with several other countries in the world by focusing on Russia?
Absolutely. And I think China is very aware of the trade-off and balances and priorities here. So you'll see that China not only has conducted this very grand state visit to Russia with Xi meeting Putin over multiple days, but they've also indicated that President Xi will reach out to President Zelensky of Ukraine after this meeting to have a conversation as well. So I think that just that in itself, the offer to propose or even perhaps to mediate a peace plan to end the Ukraine war, the phone call that is forthcoming between Xi and Zelensky, these are indicators that China is very aware that the perception in Europe will be with this visit that China is tilting into the Russian space and therefore giving Russia cover to conduct activities in Europe, including prosecuting this war in Ukraine, that are very contrary to Europe's own peace and security and stability.
That's exactly why they're aligning themselves with Russia, right? It's to differentiate themselves from the American, European, Western worldview.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. I think that China does want to have it both ways. They want to be able to leverage a strategic relationship with Russia in order to, one, keep neighborly relations strong, which is something that Xi Jinping said yesterday, that we're friendly neighbors, as well as perhaps extract at a much lower price some exports from Russia. But also, I think that they're aware that, you know, they have a trading relationship with Europe that is equally, if not more, important. And they're trying to find a balance between the principles that they want to stand on, principles that Russia agrees with, and keeping an open, relatively benign economic relationship with Europe and the rest of the West going. So this is really a balancing act, and it probably will mean that actions China takes over the next several months might seem discordant. They may seem like they are not strictly aligning with one side or the other, and it's because they want to have both their cake and eat it too.
Okay, well, last question for you, Ms. Daniels. Can they have their cake and eat it too? Will it work out for them?
They very well may. I mean, trading relationship with Europe is somewhat codependent. There are things that Europe needs from China that it doesn't want to pay for a higher price to move outside of the Chinese supply chain. So it is totally possible that China may come out of this having both a relationship with Russia and a working relationship with Europe. I think the key point here is whether is really Russia's behavior and whether or not China can exert some sort of moderating force on Russian behavior. If China cannot bring about that outcome, if it dangles that outcome to Europe as something that it can deliver, and that does not happen, then I think China will have a very, very difficult time managing this balancing act moving forward.
Rory Daniels is the managing director of the Asia Society Policy Institute. Ms. Daniels, thanks so much for your analysis today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ukraine's military is reporting that a train carrying Russian cruise missiles inside the occupied Crimean Peninsula has been attacked. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma has that story.
The claim cannot be independently verified. The vague statement by Ukraine's military intelligence agency says cruise missiles were destroyed by an explosion late Monday as the weapons were being transported by rail destined for submarine launch. The report doesn't explicitly say Ukraine was responsible or what weapon was used, but the agency implies the Kyiv government is responsible by saying the explosion destroying the missiles continues the process of Russia's demilitarization and prepares the Ukrainian peninsula of Crimea for de-occupation. I'm Charles de la Desma.
While Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Moscow, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida is visiting Kyiv. Kishida is the last of the G7 heads of state to visit Kyiv, and he'll be hosting the next G7 meeting in Hiroshima in May. For more on the Prime Minister's visit, we're joined by our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
It's an unannounced visit by the Prime Minister of Japan. It's worth mentioning that Japan is currently the head of G7 countries at this point. So it's definitely a very symbolic meeting and a visit, and especially it is symbolic considering that Chinese leader is visiting Russia right at the same time. For the moment, we know that Prime Minister of Japan has already visited Bucha. He saw the place, the site of mass grave. He visited the church next to this mass grave and saw the images from a year ago from all the massacre that was documented by the journalists. He is having a meeting with President Zelensky today, and we're still waiting for their official statements. What is also important to mention that This is the first visit since World War II by a Japanese leader to the country at war. So it's really very important, very symbolic, and extremely important for Ukraine, as Japan showing such support at such an important time.
Now, the Japanese have been morally supportive of Ukraine, but they haven't been offering the kind of military assistance that other Western and other G7 countries have. What is President Zelensky hoping to get from Kishida?
As I already mentioned, this visit was not announced, so we do not really have a lot of details of what is the agenda of the meeting. But what definitely I can say about Japanese support is that this is according to the official data provided by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine. Japan, since the beginning of full-scale invasion last year, Japan has already provided quite a lot of humanitarian support. So this is definitely something that would also be probably discussed and maybe strengthened.
Now, as you mentioned before, Xi Jinping is in Moscow right now visiting with Vladimir Putin. You have Fumio Kishida in Kyiv meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky. So you have two Asian rivals meeting with the two Eastern European rivals, you know, on either sides.
I should say that this is definitely a great description of and great example of how two major Asian countries, you know, put their influence and choose sides. But at the same time, Ukrainian officials confirm that there are talks about possible conversation between President Zelensky and leader of China right after the Chinese leaders meeting with President Putin and visit to Russia. So it might be if this talk is happening, so no one is talking about the physical meeting, but at the moment there are talks about the conversation between two leaders. But again, we will have to wait for that. For the moment, Ukraine, of at least official Ukrainian position, Ukrainian president and Ukrainian minister of foreign affairs, they had their official statements on this visit by Chinese leader to Russia, and they hope that China will find way and will find enough pressure to make Russia, finish this war.
Changing gears now, looking at the military side of the war, we've heard elsewhere in the program that there was an attack inside Crimea where some Russian missiles on a train were destroyed. Is there anything new, any new developments you can tell us about that?
This is true. Yesterday evening, it was an announcement about massive explosion in Jinkoi, on the territory of Crimea. So we don't have confirmation that Ukraine is responsible for this attack, first of all, but we have confirmation from Ukrainian intelligence. They basically say that the explosion happened, and due to this explosion, caliber missiles were destroyed, and these caliber missiles were on their transportation route at that point. So, of course, Ukrainian officials never confirmed that Ukraine is responsible for this attack. However, intelligence confirmed that actually it happened and the result of these attacks.
And that's the latest from Kyiv. Anna Chernikova, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Russia's ambassador to Australia says Australians have been brainwashed into supporting Ukraine. Alexei Pavlovsky also accused the International Criminal Court of bias after it issued an arrest warrant for President Vladimir Putin. Phil Mercer has the story.
Members of the Australian-Ukrainian community will protest Tuesday in Canberra against Russia's upcoming presidency of the UN Security Council. Rally organizers said in a statement that for the first time in world history, an aggressor and state sponsor of terrorism will be the president of the Security Council. Russia's ambassador to Australia, Alexei Pavlovsky, believes support for Ukraine in Australia is misguided. He claims the Russian public has been brainwashed and has ignored Russia's motives for invading Ukraine. Authorities in Moscow have said they intended to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. Pavlovsky has also condemned as biased allegations made by the International Criminal Court, or ICC, that Russian President Vladimir Putin has committed war crimes in Ukraine. A warrant for Putin's arrest has been issued. The allegations focus on the deportation of Ukrainian children from occupied areas of Ukraine. Authorities in Moscow have denied the allegations and denounced the arrest warrant as outrageous. Pavlovsky told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Monday that the ICC investigation was one-sided and prejudiced.
First of all, I would like to see these reports. From what I have seen so far, I gather that the bodies you are referring to are more than biased. They have a tunnel vision. They choose not to notice the ample evidence of the war crimes committed by the Ukrainian side. So my point is that any investigation should be unbiased.
Russia is not an ICC member country, and the Hague-based court has no authority there. But President Putin could be arrested should he travel to any of the ICC's 123 member states. Australia has committed $680,000 and three staff members to support the International Criminal Court investigation into alleged Russian war crimes. Canberra is also the largest non-NATO contributor to Kyiv's war effort, supplying missiles and armoured personnel carriers. Since the invasion began more than a year ago, Australia has imposed sanctions on hundreds of Russian politicians, including President Putin, military commanders and business people. They are the most sweeping penalties Australia has ever placed on another country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Life for the residents of the Bakhmut region of Ukraine includes daily shelling by Russian forces. Anna Kostachenko reports on a group of volunteers helping to evacuate residents who've decided it's time to go.
Shelling for hours on end, this is how residents of Chasiv Yar live. The town is just over 10 kilometers west of Bakhmut, the site of fierce fighting between Russian and Ukrainian forces. Before Russia's invasion, some 14,000 people lived here. Today, only a couple of thousand remain. Natalia waiting for her pension.
It was not too bad, but now there is no firewood left, so I don't know what to do. We're thinking of leaving.
In the city of Kramatorsk, also west of Bakhmut, things are better. There is electricity, communication, and stores are open, but there is shelling here too.
Last night we were shelled six times at 3 a.m. and twice at 4 a.m.
Bus routes from Kramatorsk to western Ukraine have been set up by local volunteers with the charity group Angels of Salvation. Eight other nonprofits are also helping to evacuate locals, with the help of donations from around the world, says volunteer Yevgen Pavenko.
It's fantastic. Money comes from everywhere. I received donations from my relatives in the United States as well. We use this money to buy phones and shoes for asylum seekers, use it to buy food for them as well.
Pavenko's cousin Alina Pavenko-Kirichenko moved to the United States with her parents when she was eight. When Russia invaded Ukraine, she started raising money and collecting donations for residents of Kramatorsk.
Most of our family in America continued saying, "You guys need to leave. We're worried for you." And they said, "No, we are not going anywhere." And so we thought, okay, this is serious. They're staying. They're going to be helping the people. They need help from us.
Anna came to Kramatorsk with the hope that she and her children would be evacuated. The mother is from the town of Druzhkivka, some 35 kilometers from Bakhmut.
It is no longer safe in town. Every day it's getting scarier. Our house was slightly damaged by rockets. It's cold, we don't have gas and have to cook on open fire.
A bus set up by volunteers will take all these evacuees from Kramatorsk and surrounding towns to Dnipro and Kyiv, where they hope to find shelter and a more secure life. Anna Kostichenko for VOA News, Donetsk region, Ukraine.
An art exhibition in Warsaw, Poland, brings together the work of Ukrainian artists who aim to document the brutality of Russian aggression. The exhibition is called Ukraine Under a Different Sky. For VOA, Elisa Bakalets has the story, narrated for us today by Elizabeth Chernoff.
These are the sights and sounds in Ukraine under a different sky, an exhibition here at the Ujazdowski Castle Center for Contemporary Art in Warsaw. Visitors listen to the sounds of war in a dark room with scenes of the frontline city Kharkiv displayed on the walls. For some, the exhibit can be overwhelming. Beta Lupinska-Reitel is the museum's deputy director.
It was a couple from Ukraine, which I saw. They were in this room, and they just break out and start crying.
The exhibition includes 200 works documenting the impact of Russia's war on their homeland by Ukrainian artists, including Olga Drozd. Every piece of art here tries to answer one question: how is this horror real in the 21st century? The exhibition demonstrates war not only generally, but through artists' personal experiences. When Russia started the war, Drozd began taking photographs of her kitchen window in Kyiv. The items on her windowsill changed, and over time, so did the weather, but the glass window has remained unbroken. This exhibit is entitled, Thank You for Another Day.
I just walked in my kitchen, looked at these red curtains and thought, thank God, the windows are intact today. I'm alive. I live near the thermal power plant in Kyiv, so my house often shook from the explosions.
In the next room, a bed is pierced with broken glass. Black paint is splattered all around. Artist Yulia Zakharova says it reflects how scared she feels when explosions wake her up.
For me, it is an association with my own bed, in which I woke up when full-scale aggression began. I panicked and did not know what to do next. And you know, the bed is something so sacred. It is something where we rest, where we feel safe.
Museum officials say the displays are meant to evoke empathy so that visitors can feel what life is like in Ukraine as Russia continues its attacks.
When you come into the exhibition, you can actually feel it more, what's going on at the moment. Through art, you can explain the war in a different way. It's much more emotional. It gets into your heart. We don't want people to get used to the war. We want people to talk about that Ukraine needs to be armed and need support all the time.
The exhibition in Warsaw runs to mid-May. For Lesia Bakalets in Warsaw, Elizabeth Chernoff, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media, follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
Is the voice of America, Washington, Zip T. deceived.